This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
We're back in 2011 to start talking about what's going on in the federal government and trying to access federal agencies and find out how we can help people get jobs, find out about the federal government, and then go from there and just try to do everything we can to help you succeed. Today, we're talking to Evan Lesser. He is the director. He's the founder of ClearanceJobs.com. And we're going to be talking about the kind of the clearance jobs, the defense contract community, what's going on, cybersecurity, what hot jobs, what's happening with the defense budget, and then also a new kind of cleared network that's happening. Evan, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure, Derek.
Hey, listen, you know, there's a lot of exciting things going on for 2011. You know, there's been a recent announcement, State Department announced about cybersecurity, and other agencies have been talking about cybersecurity. What's happening? What are you seeing?
You know, I think last year we saw a lot happening, especially with WikiLeaks and some of the attacks against Google and other large internet properties, but you know, what's interesting is to kind of see how everything's kind of coalescing in terms of budget money that's being spent and who's getting involved. It's definitely still evolving. Obviously, the NSA has kind of taken the lead on cybersecurity, but we're seeing a host of other agencies, from DHS to the Army to the Air Force, all getting involved with cybersecurity. You know, recently, the government has started putting together what is going to probably come out to be about a $1.5 billion cybersecurity center. It's going to be over in Utah near the National Guard base there, but the NSA will be kind of managing this. But this spy center, they're calling it, is going to be the single largest facility that's dedicated towards cybersecurity, about 1.5 million square feet, and it's just going to be a huge kind of epicenter of what's going on with cybersecurity over the next couple of years.
You know, with that being the case, I mean, as we're looking at jobs and we're looking at this kind of maybe the cyber command being created and NSA and everyone else taking the lead on this, what are we talking about for job seekers or people who are looking to possibly penetrate and get into this market? Is there anything that people should be paying attention to right now or classes they should be taking?
Well, you know, as far as cybersecurity goes, I think it's, without a doubt, over the past 7-8 years, the single largest endeavor that we've seen come out from government and contractors for, you know, one specific area. And I think what's interesting to note is that it's changing so rapidly that anyone who's interested in getting into this market kind of has to pay attention to see where it's heading. I think 2010 kind of threw us for a loop between the Stuxnet virus, WikiLeaks, and a few other things. It kind of proved how quickly everything is changing. So the government has come out lately and said that, for obvious reasons, there needs to be more protection for classified data, and kind of look at our processes as well as our technology and try to figure out what the best thing to do. You know, as far as careers are, you know, are concerned, I think that it's interesting that there's no one career path in cybersecurity that seems to be jumping out ahead of the others as the one to get into. We see a lot of need for the kind of bread and butter security personnel. These are people that be doing intrusion detection and general network security. But we're also seeing a lot of need lately for people that can re-engineer hacking worms, viruses, and things of that nature. So it's really just changing constantly.
So really, it's almost a matter of, like you're saying, is that you've got to keep abreast of what's going on in the hacking world. You've got to keep abreast of what's going on in the security world. You got to keep abreast a little bit of all of it to stay on top of it.
That's correct. Yeah, the Department of Defense recently authorized the Certified Ethical Hacking Degree, which is helps kind of comply with their DOD 8570 regulations that kind of state that anyone that works on a federal computer system and has privileged access, network administrators, network architects, user administrators, needs to have certain certifications that would kind of get them up to standards as far as the government is concerned. But it's just been interesting to watch all this evolve. I'm not sure if you heard lately, but the DoD is starting a program soon where they're going to be trying to send government employees that are involved with cybersecurity to industry and have industry move to government. This is not an insourcing thing. This is really more of a trade of human resources for a temporary time. Really, more than anything, it's trying to kind of shore up the government's cybersecurity defenses by making sure that government employees have a lot of the same information and expertise as private industry.
Because a lot of time, private industry people, I mean, if somebody's working at a Google or somewhere else, those people are kind of on the lead of cybersecurity, and then sometimes government is kind of following behind the trail. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, I think what's interesting to note is that while the government comes up with a lot of rules and regulations around its own computer systems and the computer systems that its contractors use, if you go far out of the defense industry, you look at companies like Google and Microsoft and others, and Cisco, and you know they're pioneers of what's going on in network security. Mm-hmm. And it takes a little bit of time for that technology to make its way over to companies like Boeing and Raytheon and Lockheed and what have you. But it's not surprising to see that type of a shift. You know, if you look at some of the acquisitions that have gone on in defense industry lately, you've got companies like Raytheon acquiring Trusted Computer Solutions and similar type of deals. And it really shows that these large companies are trying to kind of get themselves positioned for this huge influx of budget dollars that will be spent towards cybersecurity.
What's going to be the breakout? Is it going to be a combination of almost 50-50? Are we going to see about 50% government jobs being created from this in terms of federal workers and then 50% contractors? Or is it going to be maybe 20% government workers and more 80% contractors who are going to be working in Utah and other areas in cybersecurity?
You know, it's hard to tell. I think the that 1.5 million square foot building that's coming out in Utah obviously has a number of years before it'll be complete and will house a lot of government employees as well as some contractors. But, you know, the government pretty much understands at this point that for something that's evolving so quickly as such as cybersecurity, that industry has most of the talent and most of the technology. So I would anticipate that the majority of jobs will be with federal contractors, but the government is always looking to insource wherever it can. But I think the new initiative that they talked about with essentially having some government employees sit in for a time period with contractors to get them more up to speed is a good maneuver, and it definitely shows that the government is trying to shore up its own defenses, but it's looking to industry to do so.
You know, you mentioned Utah. I mean, that's, you know, I'm thinking about people in D.C., and I'm also thinking about people who are coming out of some of the high-tech centers like MIT or elsewhere. What kind of draw is Utah going to be? Do we, you know, are we going to see a number of people wanting to take that offer to go out that way?
Well, you know, I think that when you're looking at creating a building the size of you know, almost 2 million square feet, that mm-hmm. you need open land, so it's not too surprising that it's out there. I know that there was some political push for this operation center to go to a few locations, and Utah happened to have won out. But you know, I think it's good to shift a lot of the focus away from D.C. On cybersecurity. This is not something that's focused on one area necessarily. You know, you've got private industry, you've got large companies like Google that, for all intents and purposes, control a large part of the internet backbone, and you really have to look at this as being something that would take place across all 50 states. This is something that state and local governments have to be involved with, companies from all over the country have to be involved with. So it's interesting to see Utah as, you know, this new epicenter of what's going on cybersecurity, but it's nice to see some things not necessarily have to be in D.C. proper.
Well, you know, we've been seeing a lot of that. I mean, even with kind of either whether it be a BRAC or other agencies moving out, where even the Washington Post had that big thing about the various intelligence centers and everything else, we're starting to see a lot more government agencies put resources and put, you know, in Missouri, Utah, and other places that have not necessarily been utilized a lot. We're starting to see everything starting to move away, become decentralized.
That's right, and you know, if you look at what happened with BRAC, which should be kind of closing up this year, and a little bit into next year, you know, there was a fair shift of resources around the country. But you know, you look at job postings on a site like ClearanceJobs.com, and you can find positions from all 50 states. It's always interesting to find contracts that are happening in other parts that you wouldn't necessarily expect. Colleges and universities actually have a fair number of federal contracts, and you've got places like Georgia Tech Research Institute, MIT, University of Arizona, and others that are you know, all over the country and working for the DOD and in many cases working with some pretty cutting-edge stuff.
Outstanding. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about the defense budget and talk about maybe some hot jobs that's going to be coming up in 2011 in terms of the Clear community. We're talking to Evan Lesser. He's the founder and director of ClearanceJobs.com. They run this great site that if you are a person with an active clearance, you need to jump on here and put your resume on and start looking for jobs. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
I'm Police Officer Sergeant Goodwin. I've been looking into a report of thieves operating in this area. We have now located their hideout, and it's at your local bank. The banks are robbing you blind.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. He's right. If you've got a mortgage, your bank is stealing from you because a typical monthly mortgage payment is 90% or more interest. And over the life of a 30-year mortgage, that can cost you a fortune. It should be illegal. But there's a proven way to eliminate your mortgage and all your other debts using just the money you already make. No credit card debt, no car payment, no mortgage. To prove it, let me send you a copy of my powerful Live Debt-Free CD. Call 1-800-600-1195. Stop getting robbed of your money and future. Get my powerful Live Debt-Free CD. Call 1-800-600-1195. For your free copy of my Live Debt-Free CD, call 1-800-600-1195.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at BreakDownTheWalls.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Dell, and AVIEW Technologies. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Profile America, Friday, January 7th. A little-remembered epic of human endurance ended on this day in 1887 as Thomas Stevens arrived in San Francisco, ending the first around-the-world trek on a bicycle. He left the city by the bay in the spring of 1884, riding a Columbia Standard bicycle, one of those with a huge front wheel and a tiny back wheel and no brakes. Stevens pedaled 13,500 miles as he crossed the world's mountains, deserts, and jungles. He wrote a classic book about his adventure around the world on a bicycle, republished a few years ago, and an incentive for today's bicyclists. Each year, more than 37 million Americans enjoy riding their bicycles. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Newsmakers on the Dorabeck Insider.
Manish Chopra is the Obama administration's chief technology officer.
The ecosystem that's been born out of the open health data movement, I believe, is one of the shining lights.
Of course, it's great having somebody like Todd Park over there.
We've got chief technologies officers at the VA under Peter Levin and Jim Shelton, who runs innovation over at the Department of Education. All have demonstrated results in fostering these ecosystems to not only publish the data, but to do something meaningful with it.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Dorabeck Insider.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been talking about kind of the CLEAR community, about clearance jobs, clearancejobs.com. We've been talking about what's going on in the industry of security clearance type jobs, and we've been talking about cybersecurity as it's taking the forefront in terms of the hot jobs right now in the area of focus that's going to be an area of focus for some years to come. A big center being created out in Utah that's going to hire a bunch of people in the contract community and the federal government side. So if you are a cybersecurity professional or if you're looking for something in cybersecurity, then that will be the place to be taking a look at for future jobs. We're talking to Evan Lesser. He's a director and founder of clearancejobs.com, which is a site that if you have an active security clearance, you need to be on. Evan, we were talking about over the break, me and you were just talking about WikiLeaks, and I wrote an article for the Washington Post in my column that touched on that federal job seekers and also federal employees, I know some of the government agencies already put the mandate out, but they need to avoid WikiLeaks, avoid reading it because some of the information is still classified. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I would agree with you on that, Derek. I think that what the government says is correct. You know, some of the information that's out there could be above someone's clearance level, and you know, I think that that type of information obviously shouldn't be getting out. But you know, more importantly, if the mandate is to not be reading that classified information, then by all means, shouldn't do it. But I think that job seekers in particular would kind of do well to understand what the situation is. You know, without a doubt, I think that the WikiLeaks situation is already in the process of creating new policy, new jobs, new technology, the way that classified data is handled and distributed, and you know, this is something that's going to be ongoing for a while. This won't end this year, but it would definitely be good for candidates to understand the background behind it and know that things are definitely changing and that there'll actually be job opportunities created that come out of everything that happened with WikiLeaks over the past year. Simply due to changes that need to be made.
Are these changes rapid? I mean, are we going to see, you know, 2011 as kind of being the year of change in terms of information sharing, in terms of these new jobs that you just mentioned about kind of maybe people monitoring the networks a little bit more to make sure information doesn't get out?
Well, you know, similar to other areas of cybersecurity, what we're seeing is that so much of this is changing so rapidly. The government computers are definitely getting up to speed in terms of what most people are using these days. You look at something like cloud computing, which is being pushed hard on government as a way to save budget dollars, essentially storing data out on single servers that rest somewhere else and people tapping into them from multiple locations. And, you know, you kind of have to balance, the government's having to balance the cost of something like that, which will definitely reduce budget expense, but at the same time could possibly open security gaps. So it's interesting to see how this stuff is evolving. But, you know, to kind of get back towards the job seeker angle, if one is trying to go into this this field of cybersecurity that is without a doubt going to be what we'll be talking about for the next few years, it definitely pays to know each angle and what the issues are, because they are changing.
Got it. With defense budget, I mean, there's been some new kind of announcements with the defense budget. How is that affecting things?
So far, not too much, but I think over the next 12 months, we may see a little bit of movement. I think, you know, initially, they were talking at roughly $100 billion in savings over 5 years, and just recently, Defense Secretary Gates let Congress know that he's looking for another $78 billion in cuts over the next 5 years. So, you know, when you look at it, $178 billion over 5 years is it's a lot of money, no doubt, and the savings would be nice. But in the terms of the overall defense budget, it's not going to make a big enough impact, I believe, for job seekers at our local level to really, you know, kind of see an effect to. I think a lot of the largest cuts that can be made are done in aerospace, certain weapons programs, satellite programs, aviation, and some of those are easier to cut and try to get the justification for cutting, and they often have a very large impact in terms of budget dollars. And you know, people in Metro D.C., a lot of listeners here, won't necessarily affect them too directly.
So we're talking about people, and I know, you know, we've had a rise of the UAVs, you know, the unmanned vehicles and everything else. Has that had an impact on, you know, a number of different systems being now saying, hey, listen, we can scrap this, or, you know, we don't need this kind of fighter plane anymore because we can put an unmanned vehicle out there? Is that having an impact on jobs in certain areas?
You know, not at this point, but I think that your point is very valid and clear. I think that a lot of the discussion that's gone on in government has talked about, you know, where is the modern warfare and warfighter going, and is it more of the boots on the ground and men in the air and traditional, you know, aircraft, or are we looking at things like UAVs and war being forged on the internet? And things of that nature. And I think if you look at it, there's definitely a balance between kind of the way that we used to do things and the way that we tend to be doing things now. The shift will definitely take place over time, but it seems like over the past decade we've seen more and more budget dollars spent on things like UAVs and satellite technology and things that kind of give us the intelligence we need, rather than, you know, large multi-billion-dollar aircraft.
I know people have gotten concerned, you know, because, you know, Congress is now getting back in session, and they're going to be starting the appropriation process soon. You know, as you kind of monitor this, are there some concerns, I mean, just across the board, whether it be Homeland Security, whether it be international affairs type related, whether it be intelligence, are there some concerns of any kind of budget cuts or maybe not the same amount of appropriation dollars being given that may have an impact on jobs?
Well, I think there's some concern, but what we've heard so far from Defense Secretary Gates is that the defense budget will continue to grow. It's going to grow at a slower rate than it has in the past, which is probably fine. But, you know, what we've seen lately is not much of an indication of current effects. SAIC recently won a almost $350 million Army contract to provide simulation, modeling, analysis, and some other types of integration support. ITT just this week received a almost $17 million Navy contract working on some very specific technology for some vehicles that are operating in the Mideast. You know, those type of things come out regularly, and, you know, just because a large defense contractor gets some type of a multi-million dollar award, that those funds definitely trickle down to the smaller subcontractors. So, you know, really haven't seen anything to date that would suggest that budget cuts or proposed budget cuts or reductions in spending are going to have a huge impact on the workforce in general.
So that's pretty much good news out there for people who have been worried about this appropriation. And I think that even with the new Congress session, I mean, I haven't really heard a lot of people saying that they're going to try to cut back either defense or Homeland Security. From what I'm hearing, either it's going to stay the same or there are going to also be maybe some increases in some places.
Well, and, you know, you just pay attention to the news, and things are moving so rapidly. You talk about a defense budget cuts, but just this week we took a look at this a new stealth fighter that was shown, perhaps mistakenly, that's coming out of China. We've had WikiLeaks in the past year that clearly shows that we have a lot of work to do on our own internal cybersecurity and policy. And things like the Stuxnet virus are a little alarming, showing that the need for proactive, more, I guess you'd call them aggressive, internet techniques to, you know, literally wage warfare against someone who might be coming against us is needed. So as much as you want to talk about budget cuts, it may be cutting one area, but simply adding those funds somewhere else.
Agreed. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about what's the hot jobs, what's anything else beyond cybersecurity that people need to be aware of. If you have a clearance, what you need to be aware about in terms of salary and other things that's going on. And then we're going to talk about what's called a cleared network, kind of almost like a Facebook for cleared people. And that's kind of a new revolution that's happening right now. You're going to want to hear about that as we close out the show. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. George. I'm talking to Evan Lesser. He's the director and founder of ClearanceJobs.com. We're talking about what's happening in 2011 in terms of jobs, in terms of jobs within the defense industry, intelligence, and homeland security. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. You, the proud, the Marines.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
The Pentagon and Beyond. Brought to you by Airink.
General George Casey is expected to finish up his tour as Army Chief of Staff in the spring, and his successor is being chosen right now. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates is expected to name General Martin Dempsey. Dempsey is now commander of the Army Training and Doctrine Command and was previously acting commander of Central Command. He also led the national training effort in Iraq and commanded the 1st Armored Division in Baghdad. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine the size of an aircraft hangar that can hold four C-130 military aircraft simultaneously? Airink can. Airink operates the largest commercial hangar in Oklahoma City. As an FAA Part 145 repair station, Airink's team delivers advanced special mission capabilities, reverse engineering of obsolete parts, along with aircraft modifications, avionics upgrades, systems integration, and more. Log on to ARINC.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been having a really good conversation about what's going on in terms of the clearance community. If you have a security clearance, whether it be secret, a top secret SCI, or top secret with a poly or anything else, this is what you need to know. If you're trying to get a federal job and it's going to require a clearance, this is also information you need to know. We're talking to Evan Lesser. He's the director and founder of ClearanceJobs.com, and we've been talking about what are some of the hot jobs in terms of cybersecurity, where the defense budget is going, where the other budget's going in terms of homeland security and intelligence, and that it seems like it's going to be a pretty good market. Evan, in terms of other jobs, we talked about cybersecurity and we've had a good conversation. We know that's rising. Is there anything else that is maybe kind of still looming or still a good industry to look at when it comes to cleared jobs?
Sure. There's a few. Some are IT-related, others not, but software development jobs, software engineering jobs, continue to be a mainstay, something that we see plenty of need for. It ebbs and flows, but the medium is that there's always plenty of open jobs out there. A lot of things that we've seen lately are redeveloping some of the older legacy systems to newer technologies. So candidates that have experience in Java, QA for software. Those are the type of things that we see a lot of kind of ongoing need for. Also take a look at training and instruction. Interestingly enough, we've seen a little bit of an increase in the number of positions that have opened for instruction of all types. We've seen need for instructors in safety, in IT, in management, in intelligence, cybersecurity, and other areas. So these are, literally people creating courseware and instructing others from a very wide range of positions. So it's been interesting to watch that move out a little bit. And finally, I think we can touch on intelligence professionals. While the government has been trying to do some insourcing of intelligence positions, contractors are still heavily involved, and we find plenty of open positions for intelligence analysts, all source analysts, electronics analysis. There's just a lot going out there with regards to Intel, and from all over the country, too. It's another one of those industries that's not specifically located in D.C. It's kind of spread out.
You know, you touched on a couple different points that I want to grab on real quick. In terms of training instruction, and you said that's kind of rising, are we looking for people who will be the course writers? Like you said, I mean, they're going to be ones who are putting up stuff online, like a Blackboard system where people, you know, developing the course materials? Or are we talking about people who will be in front of people who will be the actual instructors of a classroom? Or are we talking about both?
It's kind of both. You know, there's actually a specific kind of subset of training that's involved with, you know, the kind of the correct way to put together courseware and to kind of fashion courses for a wide range of industries. So that's kind of more at a higher level. But in terms of subject matter experts, that's really where we see things across the board to have an instructor who's focused on something like operations, communications, telecom, C2, which is, you know, to find someone who's got very specific subject matter expert type of knowledge. But we do see that as well.
So we're talking about people who are maybe either senior level, maybe former military or high-level government, or somebody who's been in the government contracting community for quite some time, or some industry who has a strong subject matter expertise, who's coming in and teaching about these operational type things, whether it be operations, logistics, safety, IT, or anything else.
Exactly. And I think the job titles kind of you know, are the best description of what's going on here. And we see positions like, you know, flight simulation trainer, weaponeer trainer, tactical trainer, operations specialist, training and development specialist, technical trainer. I mean, those are the types of positions that there are, you know, a few hundred available at any given time. And it's just, you know, firearms trainer. Those are type of things that are, you know, definitely defense industry types of positions that you have to have that very specific knowledge, but we see them very regularly.
You know, you touched on one thing about titles. I mean, I'll kind of always hear about this, and sometimes I hear job seekers who, especially federal, who will do either like a, what they call a series search, and they'll be searching on their series as designated by the federal government. What's your advice, I mean, in terms of job seekers? Because I see these titles change all the time. I mean, titles, every year there's a new kind of title, and, you know, we went from one point, and, you know, to talking about gurus, and then we went to, you know, analysts, and we went to technical professionals. You know, what should people be doing? Should they be doing a title search or just a keyword search, and then just, you know, whatever the title comes up, they should still look at it? How should they go about that?
Yeah, it's tough. With the majority of resumes these days being viewed online rather than on paper, it's important to make sure that, you know, your resume details keywords, keyword misspellings, other ways to say a certain type of technology. If you use acronyms, which is obviously common in this industry, also make sure they get spelled out. It's all data. So as a recruiter or an HR person is searching through a database of resumes, in many cases they are going to be using keywords. And, you know, the question is, are they going to pull up yours or not? If you expand your keywords and make sure that you say something in multiple different ways that it could be said, you're much more likely to get pulled up and get considered for a position rather than someone who doesn't. There are a lot of terms, as you mentioned, analyst, systems engineer, very generic, and most employers are looking for something a lot more specific than a quote systems engineer quote. So definitely need to have as many details as possible.
And a program analyst can be anything. I mean, you know, I mean, different kind of titles sometimes, like you said, are so vague, and so, you know, even the job descriptions can be so vague sometimes that it's hard. So I guess what we're saying is that a person who, a job seeker, should just try to make sure they fill their resume up with as much as they can, so that the broad sweep, you know, because they may be considered for a couple different positions they don't even realize.
Exactly, and I think there's two things to mention there. The first is that, you know, the kind of the old school idea of having a resume that's two or three pages, you know, three if you're a manager, 2 pages if you're 5 years of experience, that's all long gone at this point. When you're scrolling up and down a screen, or you've got highlighted keywords or doing sub-searches on a screen, those type of things. It really does not matter how long the resume is. I think in most cases, employers would rather have more information than not enough. And when you get down to it, a lot of times an employer will be viewing a resume not necessarily to consider that particular person for a particular job, but considering them as some type of a networking resource. Here's someone that works in a very specific location or works for a company that others might be interested in or is utilizing some type of technology where their coworkers are using the same type of technology. So in terms of networking, it's important to have your resume filled out because the company may be calling you or your coworker and interested in seeing who you might be able to refer on.
You know, you also talked about insourcing. I mean, what are we seeing with that? I mean, are we seeing a shift? Are you hearing from employers on the federal or contractor side that we're starting to see? I know the acquisition was a big piece about the acquisition insourcing, like you mentioned about intelligence insourcing. What's going on with that?
Well, you know, 6 months ago, there was a fair amount of hubbub. People were kind of worried that a lot of contractor jobs were going to be moving to government, and some of them did. We've had a fair number of employers come to us and say that they lost some longtime employees to government, and you know that's probably fine. I think if the government wants to do insourcing, it can, but not nearly as much as we expected. By January 2011, you know, we had expected to see tens of thousands of jobs potentially insourced, and the reality is that not too many have been insourced, and the ones that have been insourced, you know, budget, contract, policy type of jobs that probably, you know, didn't necessarily need to be in the hands of contractors anyway. So, you know, it definitely has not had an impact like we thought it would.
You know, I'm looking at some of the tweets that are coming up from DOD and from other news networks, and as we're talking, and Gates is saying that the SecDef is saying that we're not necessarily cutting back $100 billion, we're just moving it to take care of our troops, but then they're also saying there's going to be maybe a $47,000 troop reduction by 2015. You know, I guess what we're seeing is just kind of a shift in resources, and not necessarily a cutback, but those may be absorbed, those troops may be absorbed into kind of these new industries that are coming around, the cybersecurity and other things like that in terms of defense contracting.
Yeah, and you know, I think if you simply browse over job listings, there's such a huge range from blue-collar positions to management. We talked about the trainers and instructors, IT from every sort of range. You know, you've got budget contracts, you've got finance. You know, anyone who's leaving the military these days probably has some type of skill that can be translated over to the federal contracting world.
With all of that, as we're kind of starting to swing into the social networking dynamic, you know, as a matter of fact, before we go into it, because we're coming up on a break, because I want to talk about you guys, what is called the Cleared Network? Is that what it's called?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, and it's kind of, it's like a Facebook for people who are cleared, right?
That's a very easy way to put it, but we can definitely get into it more, yeah.
All right. We'll talk about it when we come back from this next break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch. We're talking about the cleared community. We're talking about what jobs are coming up that we're going to see in 2011 and beyond. We're talking about what's happening on clearancejobs.com. We're talking about anybody who has a clearance. They need to be listening to what's happening in the cleared community and what's happening in defense and intelligence and homeland security, so you'll know where the jobs are and you'll know how to kind of plan your career out. We're talking to Evan Lesser. He's been kind of breaking it down for us, and we'll be right back after this break. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What's next for cell phones? Fancy editing of high-quality video? Data mining? Not yet, unless you want to carry around very bulky equipment. Your cell phone may do a lot of cool stuff, but its batteries, processor, and memory can't compete with your desktop computer.
The more complex you get with your expectations, the more requirements your applications have on the phone's resources.
Petros Maniatis, an Intel researcher, points to security as an example. He says a virus scan performed within your smartphone would take way too long and gulp power. The solution may lie in so-called cloud computing, where data is beamed
off to a cloud somewhere, to a server machine sitting somewhere far away, and you do the scanning there. So it takes energy, but it doesn't take the energy from your battery.
There are still engineering challenges to syncing cloud with phone, but you may one day carry the power of thousands of desktops in your pocket. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
If you want great college hoops on your schedule and with a great price, now is the time to purchase your Colonials ticket packs. Visit gwsports.com and click tickets to learn about the great package options for your wallet and your schedule. Get seats for you, your friends, and your family in the renovated Charles E. Smith Center and watch what the Express calls DC's best college team. Visit gwsports.com or call 202-994-6050 for your ticket packages today. Your tickets, your team, your GW Basketball.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything. Boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were a real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Did you know that if you're a woman over 40, you need to work out at least an hour a day just to maintain your current weight? An hour at the gym every day without losing a pound? That's ridiculous. Hi, I'm Steve Bostick, president of Right Size Smoothies. And when I heard that, I was shocked because I know that if you feed your body right, you can lose weight in no time. That's why I'm going to let anyone who calls today try my weight loss smoothies for 2 full weeks. I'll even personally guarantee that you'll see the weight fall right off. To claim your 2-week trial, call now and receive free shipping and handling. The number is 1-800-400-0861. And now I've made my smoothies even better because I'm going to guarantee the first 100 callers a 2-week weight loss trial. I'll even include free shipping and handling, plus my revolutionary blender bottle, absolutely free. But you have to call 1-800-400-0861. That's 1-800-400-0861.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been having a real good conversation about what's going to be happening in 2011 when it comes to the cleared community. People who have security clearances, secret, top secret SCI, top secret with polys and everything else. What's going to be happening with those kind of jobs? This is good for federal job seekers who are going to be going into agencies and getting a clearance, but it's also good for those who already have a clearance, whether you're a federal employee, military, or whether you're a government contractor. I have on the line with me Evan Lesser. He's the director and founder of ClearanceJobs.com, and he's been breaking it down for us. Evan, we were kind of at the end of the last segment, we were talking about this clear network and you know, people who have security clearances either kind of being on Facebook, sometimes putting out a little too much information in the social networking dynamic. That's always been a fine line. I mean, so what's the solution?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that just a few years ago, the government had come out and said, especially for cleared personnel, you know, stay off the networks. You shouldn't be advertising who you are and what you do on the social networks. You know, they are potentially a breeding ground for espionage to take place. And a few years later, you know, you look at it, and Facebook is the most trafficked site on the internet, even above Google. And the government now has for every agency a Twitter account, a Facebook account. All their recruitment efforts are focused on online and this type of business and social networking. So it's kind of done a little bit of an about face. it is a reality that really can't be escaped. More and more recruiters are spending their time online, participating in these communities and building up these networks to find their next employees, rather than putting out advertisements in newspapers, attending career fairs. You know, kind of the old way of doing things. Now, you know, on-site networking, social and business networking on various internet sites is really the way that that hiring is taking place.
So we really are seeing a true shift. I mean, because I know we were talking about over the break about how effective career fairs are at this point in time. We really are starting to see a true shift in terms of recruitment, that you can no longer just go to a career fair. You no longer can just go to one job site and find things. You've got to be part of a network. You've got to be on here interacting with people.
That's correct. And, you know, moreover, we're finding that obviously baby boomers are retiring in record numbers where they can. And some of the positions that are coming out now are looking for candidates with 5 or 7 years of experience. And these are people that have grown up on the Internet. You know, when they were born, the Internet was alive and well. So, you know, what we're finding is that the newest job seekers, the younger people in their 20s and even people in their early 30s, they're expecting a certain type of interaction in 2011 with companies and with recruiters that has not really taken place to date. They're expecting one-to-one connections. No longer can they necessarily look at a job on a company's website, apply for it, and just kind of sit around and hopefully wait for a call. Job seekers now are they're younger, they're more savvy, they're more tuned into the Internet. They have mobile applications that let them get information immediately from wherever they are. So they're expecting a much more interpersonal connection with company recruiters and HR and directly with the company rather than kind of blindly submitting some type of a resume or application and then kind of hoping to be called.
So what is this cleared network that you guys have? I mean, what does this provide a job seeker who is a person who has a clearance and needs to kind of say, well, listen, I don't want to put my information out too much. I do have to be concerned about my operational security or the security of my job, but I still want to be involved.
Exactly. So, you know, what we've heard over the past few years with services like Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn becoming not just more prevalent, but kind of part of someone's everyday life, whether they're checking on weather or keeping in touch with friends or coworkers or family or whatever they're doing, getting news, getting information, it's all integrated within the social web. So, you know, the question was, is we know that recruitment is moving in this in that direction. You know, how can we take advantage of something like that and actually try to connect companies, recruiters, and job seekers who are interested in career opportunities and still maintain operational security? So the cleared network on the clearancejobs.com site is essentially a mashup of services like Facebook and the immediacy of Twitter and the detail of LinkedIn. But it's all done from within the clearancejobs.com site. So on the job seeker side, 100% of the job seekers are cleared U.S. citizens that are career-minded. These are candidates that are interested in hearing companies' hiring messages. On the flip side, all of the employers are pre-screened U.S.-based defense contractors, and the federal government is using the service as well. So it's really a meeting ground where recruiters, HR, and job seekers can connect in one-to-one relationships and actually know everyone's name, know the name and the face behind the recruitment effort of a large company. And that's something that's not been available to date. And it's been really powerful for really letting people make relationships, but do so in a secure environment that is not public. It's not open to the general populace. It's only for cleared people, as the name would suggest.
So if you jumped on there, I mean, are you doing the same thing as you would have, like you would have your profile like you would have on Facebook? You would, you know, then you may see a recruiter or somebody online, and then you would maybe kind of chat with them or send them a message, or they may send you a message. Is it that same kind of dynamic?
It is. I think, you know, the way that things kind of worked in the past is that an employer would post a job. A job seeker would hopefully come across the job. They would apply for the job and then kind of wait to see if they would hear back from an employer. But with the prevalency of Facebook and Twitter and other social networking, it's not about that kind of disassociation. It's about a much more direct connection and direct communication. So the way that it works on the Clear Network is that an employer who finds a job seeker can wish to share their profile with that Clear job seeker, and the job seeker can do likewise. By doing that, names, faces, contact information that each party has chosen to share is revealed in this this private atmosphere, and doing so is really kind of established these one-to-one connections and let recruiters build up a network of potential candidates for their current and ongoing hiring needs, and also let candidates build up a pool of recruiters. You know, you never know when your contract is going to be unfunded, defunded, refunded, whatever the case might be, and a candidate needs to be looking for a new job. So to have a network of recruiters that they can tap into and let them know, I'm job searching again, I have new qualifications, I have new certifications, here's my current status, and likewise have employers be able to reach out to a network of candidates and say, here's the new open positions we have, here's where we're at on the contract that we've been bidding on, you know, just let that exchange of information happen is really powerful in getting people hooked up for new jobs.
The Clear Network is on clearancejobs.com, and so you need to check that out. If you've got an active security clearance and you need to start, you know, doing a job search, or you're kind of thinking about making a move to either another contractor company, or maybe you got federal agencies on there too, right, Evan?
That's correct. Yeah.
So I mean, are you having federal recruiters who are also looking for very technical people doing the same kind of active recruiting?
Without a doubt. You know, some agencies are more attuned to, literally getting into the thick of things and looking through resumes and networking with candidates than other agencies. But, you know, as I said a little bit earlier, I think that the government has pretty much embraced the social media in terms of recruiting. And they know that the candidates are thriving and living online, and the best way to reach out to the skilled personnel is to kind of meet with them where they spend the most time.
Evan Lesser, he's the director and founder of clearancejobs.com. If you need to check out and you know, if you're doing a job search, you need to jump on there and see what's happening with this Clear Network, with also the job seeking tools they have on there. Thank you so much, Evan. We will catch up with you probably in a couple months to kind of get any updates as this acquisition, you know, as new things are acquired, as the appropriation dollars are being spent, and we can kind of see where 2011 is going.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED. Your source for federal news now.
Hi, I'm Denise Ballou of the FBI. The case was revealed in December 1995. Operation Senior Sentinel targeted illegal boiler rooms and telemarketing fraud.
The case was hugely significant in that it's one of the few, if not only, instances I can think of where an entire crime problem was basically wiped out by very focused, dramatic investigation.
Keith Slaughter is special agent in charge of FBI San Diego. Formerly in Miami, he initiated the undercover operation that evolved into Senior Sentinel.
These were telemarketers who were really, really bad individuals, who were promising big prizes and a lot of different things, preying on customers, especially the elderly.
Many were conned into losing their life savings, but the tables were turned.
Instead of using undercover agents in those cases, we used a combination of retired agents and retired citizens affiliated with the AARP to pose as victims.
Ultimately, about 1,200 arrests and hundreds of convictions. I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm not just some tall drink of water, you know. I mean, I wash your dishes, I do the laundry, I help put out fires. I'm always there when you need me, 24/7, at home, at work, just about anywhere. And I'm not expensive, but I have great taste. Well, I guess I am a tall drink of water, but I'm tap water, and that makes me special. For more information about what only tap water delivers, visit drinktap.org.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour's Conversation with Authors series, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness. What are the benefits of regulatory partnerships? How can new approaches to public-private partnerships enhance food safety? Join host Michael Keegan as he profiles three IBM Center reports and explores these questions and more with authors Russ Mills, Cassandra Mosley, Professors Noel Grease, and Monica Noguera. Next week on the Business of Government Hour. There are those.